Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Helix Reviews podcast. My name is David Arrington, bringing you reviews from a Christian geek worldview. Today on the show, for some reason, I'm once again talking about Suicide Squad. Now, you may be asking, dude, this movie came out a couple years ago now. You've already reviewed it on the show. Why are you once again talking about Suicide Squad? Well, it's because I just recently rewatched Suicide Squad, and I watched the extended cut, and I think there was some interesting things there, and I think, I came away from rewatching that movie wanting to talk about it some more. So here on this show, I'm going to talk about it some more, and it's going to be full spoilers. So if you haven't seen Suicide Squad by now, I mean, it's been a while. You probably should have seen it by now, I guess, but full spoiler warning, just in case, just so you know, I'm going to be talking about things that happen throughout the movie. The extended cut to this movie adds about an extra like 10 to 15-ish minutes to the movie overall. So really it doesn't add a ton of new content to the movie per se. This isn't like, you know, Batman v Superman where it's like a half an hour longer, right? That said, that 10 to 15 minutes extra really does add something to this movie, I think. It really kind of fleshes out this movie in ways that the theatrical cut really needed. I mean, first off, it fleshes out some of these characters better than the theatrical cut. I mean, namely, Harley Quinn, the Joker, and actually Captain Boomerang, of all people. I actually really liked Jai Courtney's take on Captain Boomerang here. I mean, very much kind of in line with who he is in the comics, which is just kind of a scumbag. And here in this movie, that's very much who he is. And his just kind of goofy personality and everything. And he's just, like, I have a feeling he's smarter than he's letting on, right? And the way he kind of plays dumb to everybody to make himself seem like less of a threat or less of, you know, who, something that, you know, people should be on the lookout for or something. And then so he can fly under the radar and then pop up and be, you know, and actually do something smart or, you know, do something impressive, right? This is probably my favorite Jai Courtney performance. I don't particularly care for Jai Courtney as an actor most of the time, really, but in this role, I think he actually really nails it, and they actually do a little bit more with his character here in the extended edition here. But, I mean, for the most part, it's really kind of focused on Harley Quinn and Joker. You really get a lot more of the psychiatrist or psychotherapist angle with Harley Quinn in this version, which is great. I loved that stuff in here. We get a glimpse at her background with how she's interacting with people, you know, in the modern day. So it's like, it's this great blending of she has all this knowledge. She's really smart because, you know, she had to go through all the school to get all this knowledge, and she, you know, she was a psychiatrist. She was working on, you know, people, on the Joker, but on other people too, I imagine, at least. And we see that very clearly in this extended cut, in these scenes, these little scenes and snippets and things that were cut out of the original release. And that's, it's a bummer that it's cut out, because there's some really good stuff in here. At a point, she's just kind of bored, and so she's using, like, those skills to just mess with people's minds, and she's just kind of irritating, like, Killer Croc, and just trying to mess with his mind and get him mad and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, and then she just kind of goes and starts doing it to all the team, starts kind of breaking them down and everything. It's like very, very interesting and really well done. I really like this version of Harley Quinn, and I think in this extended version they really do more justice to her character than they did in the other regular version. And with more Harley Quinn also comes more Joker, and this one's a bit more of a mixed bag, because this version of the Joker, I remember when I originally saw it, I was like, you know what, there's really not enough of the Joker here to judge whether I like this version of the Joker or not. So I just really left it kind of conflicted as to, you know, do I even like this version of the Joker? I don't know, it's just kind of up in the air, you know? But rewatching it here, and now you get more Joker. You get significantly more Joker in this. I mean, he has a whole new scene, and then a lot of the scenes that were all kind of chopped up all weird in the main movie are actually let play out in this version. So you actually get to see more of this version of the Joker. And I guess I'm kind of seeing a little bit of what some of the detractors of this version of the Joker are saying. I like kind of that they're going for a different angle with the Joker. All right, we're going to go with more of a crime boss version of the Joker. That's interesting. And I think Jared Leto does give a good performance. It's just, is this the version of the Joker that I want? And I mean, it's just his Joker, his version of the Joker is not as good as, you know, the Dark Knight version of the Joker. His version of the Joker is not as good as Gotham's version of the Joker, honestly. Frankly, I think it could be a little better, but it's, I guess I'm all right with this version of the Joker. I just think there's better versions out there. Anyway, it's cool though to see more of the Joker here than we've seen in the original version. Deadshot's probably the character whose storyline was most intact in the theatrical version of the movie. That said, you do get a little more with Deadshot here. I mean, you get to see a little more of Deadshot and Diablo kind of butting heads, you know, and it actually ends up kind of making more sense down the road a little bit when he's really being antagonistic towards Diablo, and then, you know, Diablo blows up and shoots the fire and all that. It's like they build up to that a little better in this version because you see things that happened before that were building up to that were all cut out, you know. You also see more of Deadshot and Rick Flagg together and a little bit more of them kind of teaming up and talking a little bit about how they need to team up or they're all going to die and this kind of stuff. And you actually get a better sense of camaraderie between those characters and actually the entire team. This, what the theatrical cut did is they cut out a lot of the little character moments. They cut out a lot of these little moments that really helped kind of bring these characters together and bring this group of characters together as a team and really make them gel together better. Now, I mean, by the time you get to the end and Diablo's like, I'm not losing another family, that still doesn't quite feel earned, but it feels more earned in the extended version than in the theatrical version where it's like, all right, well, I don't know about family, you know? It's like, maybe that's going a little bit far, you know? But this version, you actually get a little bit more of a sense of closeness with some of these characters. Now, it's not as well done as it could be. Like, I don't know why Captain Boomerang comes back at the end. He just kind of pops back up again, and he's like, oh, he's here again. I don't know why he came back, quite frankly. I don't know why he would follow them. I mean, you know, maybe, you know, he has probably the least camaraderie with all of them. He has some fun jokes and some fun interactions with some characters, but as far as him actually getting attached to some of these other characters, he probably has some of the least of that amount of screen time. So I think this movie, it could have used a few more drafts. I mean, if you know, from the as far as writing it and stuff like that goes, and you listen to interviews with David Ayer about this movie, and he'll say that. Like, he'll say he was really rushed in making this movie, and it's kind of evident watching the movie, because if they just worked with this concept and worked with what they had here a little more, this could have been a great movie, but it didn't end up being a great movie, you know, because it was just kind of rushed out the door, seemingly. And then that seems like why it ended up not being as good of a movie as it could have been, despite the fact that I had fun with the theatrical cut, and now I'm having even more fun with the extended cut. One character that was underserved in the theatrical cut is still underserved in the extended cut, Katana. You do get one more scene with her, But I mean, really still, you know, it's the scene where she takes off her mask and she's like, I'm not hiding and stuff. It was the scene where Harley Quinn was diagnosing these people and just trying to get under their skin and all that kind of stuff. She takes off her mask, I'm not hiding and stuff. And so I was like, okay, you know, a good little scene with her. But really, we still get next to nothing with her in this movie. It almost seems like a waste of a character, you know? It's kind of a bummer. And then at a point in the movie, she just kind of disappears, you know? They all go into the bar, and she walks off, and I guess I thought she was going into the bar. She did go into the bar because she, like, got a drink or something, but then she didn't go with the team at the end. I don't remember her in the final fight at all, so I don't know what happened to Katana. Did she leave? I guess? I don't know. I mean, it seems like if she's a good guy, if she's a hero, then maybe she would be one of the more likely ones to actually go in and help with this mission to ultimately save the world. But, I mean, she doesn't, and the character is just very, very underutilized. It kind of seems like a waste of a character, because Katana is a cool character, but they just do so little with her in this movie. It's kind of like, ugh, that's a bummer. One of the big changes, this has less to do with the extended version, but one of the big changes from the comics and from Batman the Animated Series, where this originated, is the relationship between the Joker and Harley Quinn. I mean, they do some things the same, you know, they, you know, dunk her in Ace Chemicals and stuff like that, and then they hint around the Mad Love storyline. But there was one major thing that they really changed with the Joker and Harley Quinn's relationship, and that's that this version in Suicide Squad actually seems like a two-way loving relationship. And this may sound weird, but I kind of wish it was the abusive relationship from the animated series slash the comic books. I mean, let me explain. I mean, first off, the Joker's psychotic. Can he feel love anyway? I mean, in the traditional sense, I guess. I don't know. But moving on even from that, Harley Quinn, for better or worse, is a character that nowadays people look up to. You know, the movie was a big hit. You know, critically it wasn't really, but the movie was a big hit, and people loved the character of Harley Quinn. People latched onto the character of Harley Quinn. And, you know, young girls and young women look up to Harley Quinn. They want to be like Harley Quinn because she's so fun and she's so lively, and you love watching this character, and it's almost kind of a character like, oh man, that'd be fun to, you know, hang out with this character, except for, you know, she might end up killing you or something, so it wouldn't be that fun. But you know, because of all this stuff, you know, it's like, oh man. And so them looking up to her, and then she, I guess she's not a good character in the first place, right? She's a villain, she's evil, and she owns it. Like she says in the bar to Diablo. I think that was a new scene as well, where she's like, hey, you need to own this, you know? Which was also a very good scene. Anyway, I guess my point is, as far as this goes, the relationship between the Joker and Harley Quinn is not good, right? And I guess my concern is just that, you know, with the Joker and Harley Quinn having this loving relationship, and it's kind of looked on almost as like this good, positive thing for the characters in some ways, it's like, okay, but it's not. You know, the Joker is absolutely horrible. He's one of the most, like, despicable villains you can get in some ways, right? And so to have this character that is in some ways a role model, for better or for worse, right? But in some ways a role model, being in love and infatuated with this crazy guy that is really kind of evil and wrong. And it's like, I guess it kind of promotes the idea of something that would end up with somebody being in an abusive relationship. You know, you getting into a relationship with somebody who is, you know, an outcast in a very bad way, right? Who's somebody who is very weird and evil and kind of twisted, but, you know, and then the movie kind of looks on it as this positive and kind of appealing thing, and I just don't know that is something that would be, good for, you know, some viewers to watch and to consume, and then have that idea kind of be planted in their mind a little bit. And, you know, that concerns me a little bit, and it makes me think, okay, you know, if, I guess at least if it was an abusive relationship and they could kind of acknowledge that it's an abusive relationship and actually show that. I mean, they kind of hint at it a little bit, but not very much. It's mostly just kind of a loving relationship, seemingly, in this movie. And I guess I'm just thinking, if it's an abusive relationship, I guess it shows the consequence of you hanging out with and getting together with this kind of guy, you know, or getting together with this kind of person, right? It shows the consequence of that. There's somebody that you think is evil. Like, she thought Joker was evil in the beginning because she's a psychiatrist and she's trying to help him. But then when she starts to fall in love with him and everything, and she kind of gets turned over to his side, right? And I guess they could do a better job at showing the danger of some of that, and showing it with an abusive relationship, you see the danger and you see the consequence of getting into a relationship with this, you know, with something like this, you know. And I guess that's, am I explaining myself well? Am I explaining what I mean here with, you know, why I think an abusive relationship would have worked better in the context of this movie for this character? I suppose that can also be glorified in some ways, because I have heard it said that, oh, you know, sometimes the Harley Quinn comics and stuff are the glorification of an abusive relationship. And it's like, well, that's not good. You know, that's not good either. But I think if it's an abusive relationship, I think it's a lot clearer to see the negatives of that than if it is seemingly a loving relationship that is very positive both ways. You know what I'm saying? You know, instead of the Joker more or less using her and then... But in this one, again, in this one, it seems more like the two-way loving relationship, which is different and unique as far as most of everything that I've seen or read with Harley Quinn and the Joker. So I guess there's my opinion as far as that whole aspect goes. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm trying to express myself clearly here, and I feel like I'm not doing the best job at it, but there's my thoughts on their relationship there. I also wish they didn't feel the need to sexualize Harley Quinn so much in this movie. And it's just unnecessary, quite frankly. I mean, something Margot Robbie said about Birds of Prey, which is the next movie that's going to have Harley Quinn in it, something she said about that, she said there's going to be less man-gazing, I think is the term she used, which is not a term that I've heard before, but I think that's a term that means, hey, she, you know, she's not going to dress in either as skimpy outfits, or the movie's not going to be leering at her like the movie is assuming you are when you're watching the movie, you know? And so and she basically said that's going to be definitely way toned down in Birds of Prey because, you know, it's a woman director, it's an all-female cast and all this kind of stuff, which, you know, I'm happy about that, because that's something that I thought was pumped up way too much in Suicide Squad, and that kind of detracted from the movie a little bit, because it's like they're just kind of throwing that in your face a little bit sometimes in Suicide Squad. So overall, Suicide Squad, the extended edition, is an improvement over the original, the theatrical version, in my opinion. It really does do a lot to add to some of these characters, to bring this team together a little bit more. Now, I mean, it's not perfect. It doesn't fix all the problems. I mean, really, Enchantress should not have been the villain of this movie. You know, this movie really shouldn't have had an impending global disaster. Right? The Suicide Squad shouldn't be saving the world, at least not in this first movie, right? It should be something a little smaller. The villain of the movie should have been the Joker, you know? The Joker doing something crazy in Gotham, you know? That should have been the villain of the story, right? But No, here we got the Enchantress. It's these big monsters fighting and this big beam going into the sky and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's like, all right, this is not what we needed with a Suicide Squad movie. We needed something a little bit smaller, a little bit more intimate, character focused. And you know, you get something a little bit more character focused with this extended cut, which I appreciated. But, you know, if you hated the first version of, you know, the theatrical version of Suicide Squad, then I don't think you're going to love this version. If you liked the version of Suicide Squad that came in theaters, I think you'll like this one even more, because that's what I did. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's just very problematic. And I am really looking forward to when James Gunn does his version of Suicide Squad coming out. Couple years, next year? When is that coming out? Anyway, when James Gunn does his version of Suicide Squad, that's technically a sequel, but kind of an undercover reboot kind of thing, because they want to change things up and make things different. They don't want to be so connected to this movie because of some of the negative reactions that this movie did get. But it's definitely going to be a sequel, because, you know, they're still going to have some of these same characters from this movie. So I'm looking forward to that one. I hope it does make the improvements needed on it. I in some ways, I don't understand why this movie was so rushed. I think the movie was probably rushed because they're trying to get this cinematic universe going, you know? Snap, snap, let's go. And they really shouldn't have, because this movie isn't a cinematic universe launching movie. I mean, it is in some ways. It opens up this whole world. You have all these different wacky characters from all over the place and all that kind of stuff. So I guess it opens up the world in an interesting way. It's just not one that you should really start off if you're trying to make a DC cinematic universe, at least in my opinion. You start off with your Supermans, Batmans, Flashes, Wonder Womans, all those characters, you know, instead of a Suicide Squad movie. That said, you know, they're going for something weird, and I can appreciate that. They're going for something else weird with the Joker movie coming out later this year, and I can appreciate that as well. So, you know what? They're doing something different. They're doing something unique, and I can at least appreciate that, though I do see a lot of room for the DC movies to get better and improve in the future, despite the fact that I do actually enjoy most all of the ones that have come out thus far. Some other interesting news here, as far as DC goes. Robert Pattinson has been cast as Batman in the upcoming Matt Reeves Batman movie. Okay. Interesting choice. I mean, obviously, I guess my initial thought, and I think a lot of people's initial thought, is, wait, the vampire from Twilight is going to be Batman? Horrible. What the heck are you doing here? But also, He has a lot more movies than just vampire and Twilight movies, you know. So he has a lot more movies apart from that. I've seen Good Time, and he was good in Good Time. You know, there's no movies that I've seen with him that really makes me think, oh, this guy could be Batman, you know. This guy is a really good choice. And there's movies, you know, I guess, that make me think, oh, why would you pick him for Batman, which would be Twilight, which I've never actually seen. So, you know, I guess I don't have a good enough reason per se to diss this guy playing Batman, but on the other hand, you know, I can't say I'm really excited that he's playing Batman, because I haven't seen anything from him that makes me think, oh, that's Batman, that he could be Batman, you know. So I'm curious. I'm really curious to see how this is going to turn out. Matt Reeves, good director, so I'm looking forward to him directing one. We get a younger Batman. Does this mean, what does this mean? Is this a prequel? Is this going to take place in the 80s or something? Or when does this movie take place? You know, I don't know. I'm curious. If they're rebooting Batman and having a younger Batman in modern day, I don't know how that works. Because if you do end up having another Justice League movie somewhere down the road, how does that, do you cast another Batman as an older Batman because Ben Affleck's done? Like, I don't know. It's so weird to me, like, how this is going to work. I don't know. Right now, DC seems to be focusing on single movies, though. They're like, all right, we tried to rush this whole cinematic universe thing. We tried to get it out the door. We tried to get right up to Justice League really quickly, and that didn't work. Now we're trying individual movies. We're going to have Shazam, where we're going to have a Joker solo movie that's not even in the same universe as everything else, you know, and we're going to have a Batman solo movie, more Wonder Woman movies, you know, all these different kind of things. Potentially a spinoff of Aquaman based around the trench monsters. What? That is so weird. That's like the Conjuring cinematic universe style of cinematic universe, as opposed to most superhero cinematic universes. That's such a weird idea, but you know what? I would watch it. I would be curious to see what it is. That should be like a lower budget version in this universe of big budget movies, probably. So that's interesting, but I don't know. I have a feeling that one will probably never come to be, but if it does, I'm curious. I'm really curious. Anyway, that's all I have to say here. Have you seen the Suicide Squad Extended Edition? Shoot me an email, helixreviewspodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this movie. Is this version better? Is the theatrical version better? Or is none of these versions even worth watching, in your opinion? Shoot me an email. I'd love to hear from you guys. The Helix Reviews Podcast is a proud member of the Christian Geek Central Network, hub of all kinds of cool Christian geeky stuff from around the web, all funneled to ChristianGeekCentral.com. Check it out. Not exactly sure what's coming up on the next episode, but hopefully it's awesome. That's it for this time, guys. This is David Arrington of the Helix Reviews Podcast signing out. Bye-bye, guys.
Bad guys, it's what we do.